So, as we are now coming in the week before Rosh Hashanah, so most Sephardi communities started saying Slichot to prepare for the Yom HaDin from Rosh Chodesh Elul. We Ashkenazim, we started today, last night or this morning, a minimum of 4 days, because really the concept of the korban is to come near to Hashem, and we wish to come near to Hashem. To be near to Him, and it says, you've got to come near to Hashem when He is near, and He makes Himself nearer to the people of Israel on Rosh Hashanah. So each one of us have to prepare ourselves. Nihit Karev. And when one brings an animal for an offering, one has to investigate it for 4 days if there's any type of blemish in the animal. For example, if there's a blemish, if there's a split in the lips, if there's something wrong with the eye. For us, what's split in the lips, what's that mean? It means we don't use our lips for good speech, instead sometimes for evil speech. And the eyes, sometimes we look at things that just stimulate animalistic desires, or we look at people with jealousy instead of seeing the good in people. So these are all blemishes of 4 days. But to understand on a deeper level, we now turn to this essay. This is one of the talks. It's the Chot Musa of Rodesler, who was one of the greatest teachers of the inner significance of the mitzvot and of the Torah, and how we have to try to improve our character and behavior. So the explanation of Rosh Hashanah, which you've got in front of you, which we're going to more deeply, which will make our Hatzah Rosh Hashanah more meaningful, is as follows. It says, Rosh Hashanah is the source of the life power for the days of the year. For a Gama, we become accustomed that the concept of Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment for sins, and also, even if we have merits, but intermingled with the merits, the Zechile Korah, Mu'urah, intermingled with our Zechuyot. So Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment. It's also the first day of the 10 days of penitence. Yom Rishon L'Tshuva V'Tikkun. This is something clear and truthful. Omnam, however, there's something more significant. On the positive side, Rosh Hashanah is the root for the spiritual influences of the whole year. Hashpa'ot Ruchaniyot, L'chol Hashanah. Let's explain this with a parable. More than a parable, it's really a parallel. Hine b'moach ha'adam, in the human brain, mushrashim kol atzavav kulam, or the nerve system takes its root in the brain. You know, I have a student here who wants to become a neurologist. Neurologists, they study the workings of the brain. And the whole of the nervous system has its root in the brain. Whatever a person feels in one of his limbs, it's got roots in the brain. Well, the life power of all the limbs and the feelers come from the brain. And therefore, if there's a partial shito, paralysis, in any part of the brain, then as a result, don't feel at all anything, and those limbs that belong in the root of the nervous system, that part of the brain which has become paralyzed, because the life power has been taken away. And apart from this, if they were to cut off that limb itself, it won't help. It won't bring back to life the brain cells that have become paralyzed. Because the limb itself is cut off from the source of its life power. I just say in connection with this that I'm sure all of you have read articles and know about the near-death experiences, of which there are millions of records today, that people are clinically dead in a coma, and then they come out of the coma, sometimes a short time, sometimes a long time, and then they can give evidence about many things that went on in their inner experience, although they were clinically dead. And I've got, somebody lent me, what is perhaps the strongest proof for Yitzchiut HaNeshama. Because today many principles of faith, which we accepted be'emuna, today scientific facts have demonstrated the truth. So there's one of the greatest professors of brain psychology, even also physiology, somebody called Abe Alexander, not Jewish, and he was very much opposed to regarding the near-death experiences as being a reality. He said it's psychological illusions. Like so many, that's what people think when they haven't really gone to the subject thoroughly. And he, as a professor at Harvard, also one of the greatest brain surgeons in America, so he had a very severe tumor in the brain. And he became unconscious entirely. He was clinically dead. And he had experiences, and he came out of it. When he came out of it, he had constant struggle. On the one hand, he could report realities, in other words, that when he was clinically dead, he was able to know what's going on in this world also, as nearly all of them do. At the same time, he came into confrontation with God. I don't totally understood God, but still. And he describes all this in a book called Proof from Heaven. And he struggled. He tried to deny his experiences and regard them just as illusions. But he had so much proof from his own experience, he couldn't accept it. So he decided that he made a mistake, and that life does continue, even when you're clinically dead. Even when your brain is not working at all, it's in most areas, but there's something beyond the brain, which is the spiritual essence of the human being, which is the soul. The brain cells are still part of the nefesh habahamit. Animals also have brains, on the basis of which they act, they're active. With so many different qualities you find in the animal world. And apparently human beings got something beyond the brain, which is the spiritual mind, something spiritual. And that's a greater reality when you analyze it in his mind than the whole physical world. In other words, God is the mind of the universe, is beyond the universe, and it's a... there have been other books, lots of many books on this subject. So this is the situation of the way in which the soul, as it's described also in the Chumash, is a breath of God. We breathe in, it says, Vayipach ba'apav. Apav is a reference, the external part of the face, which covers the brain also. Into the external physical aspect of the head of the human being, there's this power of the soul. Anyway, Hirav Dessler just uses this in accordance with the principle. I think you can understand it easier if we refer to the oldest grammatical and Kabbalistic work, which we have in Jewish tradition. Mentioned also the Gemara.
Sefer Yetzirah,
the book of creation, which is attributed to Avraham Avinu, and the book of Hebrew grammar, which goes back to the concept of all roots in Hebrew go back to two consonants, which is very interesting. And the same idea of the grammar of Hebrew is brought in one of the classics of modern linguistic. Somebody called A. Diamond wrote a book on the origin and structure of language. And there he develops the concept that all language begins with two consonantal letters. And he finds source for this in African and in Hebrew. Very interesting. Like Rashi says, Totafot, Tat and Pat, these are expressions of two, what's in the African languages. Anyway, this in the Sefer Yetzirah, it divides all existence in the world in three dimensions. It's called Olam Shana Nefesh. Olam is the world of space, Shana is the world of time, and Nefesh is the world of the spirit, the human being, which is beyond time and space. So also, you can say, here the Mashal is brought from the body of the human being, and it's compared, you have a comparison, between the way in which the body of a human being is dependent on the head, the nervous system is dependent upon the roots of the nervous system in the brain, and also time, as we know it, follows a repetitive cycle, however, where everything comes anew. That means one year is not the same as the previous year, although the cycle is the same cycle. So you say like this, Kasha Bara, no, in the middle of the page, Kasha Bara Hashem Yitbarach Olamo, when Hashem Yitbarach, means God may be blessed, created the world, Tziva Shetishkalchel Hashpato Milmala Meazman, he gave a commandment that his divine emanation and influence, which is above time, should enter into time. Which are the overall principles of the time, should enter into the world of time. The Hainu, which means Hitchakut li pratim shokol yom b'sha'av rega. Time is subdivided. The year, then the days, and the hours and the moments. Ketzar, how is this? Hadibo harishon haya bereshit. The first word of creation is bereshit. And Bereshit, Dibur HaKolel Kol HaBriya. It's a word that includes all creation. And then afterwards, in the first chapter of the Chumash, Shah Mirot B'Yamim Nifratim, the other statements that God made, as it were, the decisions to produce different energies in the world, are separate. Dan Dereshit Kolel Kol HaZmanim, the first point of time, includes all the times that afterwards are separated, Misham mit Pardim. From there they separate. Now first let me compare this to the concept developed by thinkers in modern science called the singularity. Also they ask the question, how does the world begin? So it's there with a singularity. Everything started from some concentrated point of energy, which then that energy was enormous power, and that energy produced four forces. The singularity is the first energy. Maybe I don't look at the details, you find them in described work by a person like Steve Hawkins, but you'll also find there's quite a few Jewish top scientists who describe this in Jewish terms. I've got a lot of books in the library. They're from different people. They find there's one scientist who did a lot of books about the Big Bang. It's the same concept. So this applies. This is all hinted at in the word Bereshit. In other words, there was one point where Hashem, from above time, entered the world of time and created a universe which called the time-space continuum, contained universe that had both dimensions of time and dimensions of space, which are then described in the six days of creation. Now the same concept is in the commentary of the Gaon of Vilna. The word Bereshit is an unusual form. You know what it's called in Hebrew grammar? Smichut. Bereshit means the beginning of. But it doesn't say the beginning of what? Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning of what? So the answer is, the first word, Bereshit, is the word that describes, it's got the word Rosh, it's like the head. Just like the head, the body, contains potentially all the limbs of the body, so also the Bereshit contains all aspects of what happens in time. The Gaon makes an unusual statement. He says, whatever is going to happen in the world, it all hinted at in the word Bereshit. Bereshit provides the potential power. And then he divides up. So he says, Sod Rosh Hashanah Rishon. This is the mystery of the first Rosh Hashanah, on which it said, Zikaron Liyom Rishon. Rosh Hashanah is to give us a commemoration of the beginning of time, the first day. Shiloh HaYom HaDin, it was not a day of judgment on the past, because there was no past in our sense. It was the creation of time. Hashem Yitbarach Kalal Bo Et Hashpoach Kol HaShanah. Hashem put into that beginning point all the influences of the whole year. V'Bechina Shekalul B'Muach Yus Kol HaYivurim, just like the brain contains potentially the life power of all the limbs. The memory of Padul Cholyom Vyom Chelkom Yuchadlo. From the first day of the year, they separate for each day its particular portion. Omnam Misham Ve'Ela. From then onwards, Shar Rosh Hashanah Shebo Achaka. The further beginnings of the year, the heads of the year that come afterwards, even though we say upon them, Avshenema Gam Alehem, Ze Hayom Tchilat Ma'asecha, this day is the beginning of your deeds, Enem Ela Begede Zikaron Liyom Rishon. It comes to remind us the beginning of creation. And then every year this is repeated. So Rosh Hashanah Rishon, on the first Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ashanichel Bolochol Ashanah, Hakol le'ayav matchat chinam men yatrach. It was what we call itarut de le'elo. This was a power that came entirely from above. Without, there weren't human beings yet. No human beings. That means the various divine influences that come to the world came out of the loving kindness of Hashem to prepare a universe for the future to be created human being. Now this concept, this is just Aramaic form, hit orot shelamala with orot shelamata. In all things in life as we know it today, so the divine emanations that come down to mankind as a whole, the people of Israel in particular, to every individual, are dependent upon human beings. Hashem, it's very interesting, one of the major trends of modern science is to say that this globe, on which we have human beings, is anthropocentric. It means it's, as it were, made for human beings to be able to live here. Specifically, it would be a little bit nearer the sun, it would burn up. A little bit further away from the sun, it would freeze. And you're going to study all the different procedures that go on in the world. They lead up to the possibility of an intelligent human being, which is a concept accepted both by those who follow a non-evolutionary hypothesis and those who follow evolution, whichever you look at it. There's no question it's anthropocentric. So in other words, the divine power from above, the mind of the universe, as the scientists call it, the power that comes from there is originally without being dependent on human beings at all. But Hashem created the world to become dependent. That's the deeper meaning of what the sages say, Bereshit. Barai Elokim, no nivra olam ela v'shvil Yisrael shnikur Bereshit. People of Israel. Well, the people of Israel are the people who are aware and have been given the awareness, so it turns out in human history, that there is a moral God and that we have to worship Him. When the sages say it, they don't mean to exclude mankind, on the contrary. The first 11 chapters of the Chumash don't deal with Israel at all. They deal with the development of mankind. And if earlier there would have been a possibility to bring the whole world to a basic recognition of the relationship between man and God, then it would have been a redemptive situation for all mankind from the beginning. But mankind went down and down, and all the efforts did not help until Avraham Avinu, not Avraham's descendants, were not all fitting. And then it was left for Israel. And this is the basis of Rosh Hashanah, where also we say all mankind, everything that we know in this world is judged by Hashem. Nevertheless, the people who keep Rosh Hashanah is the people of Israel, because we are the ones to be the kingdom of priests, the holy nation. On which of that pasuk it says, Kelih v'la'aretz. But I want the whole earth to come unto me. Now, you have any comments or questions?
I have a question of the beginning. In the beginning, time, space, and motion only exist in the mind. And also, if you're saying Bereshit, in the beginning, God created time, it could be he created reality. And reality itself only lives in the mind, or only exists in the mind.
Do you agree with this? Do you agree with this concept, Rav Avishai, that everything only exists in the mind? In whose mind?
In the Kodesh Bukhu's mind.
It's world's mind.
Yeah. And in our mind.
In our mind?
It could be. But we only exist because He exists. If He didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. And only a thing that contains life can give life.
Okay. What do you say? Let's hear about it. Yes, what do you say?
Also a similar question, actually, that I mean, most of us know of this film, probably Matrix, which was at some point very popular. Matrix, it was like actually a person that lives, this whole world is like an illusion. We live actually in a kind of a box, which all is imaginative. So if you say bear the shit, means bear, and rash is the rush actually, it means in the mind. It's exactly, I think, what we wanted to say. In the mind, Hashem created the world. It means in his mind, and that means at the same time in our minds, because we got this spirit from him. So that would mean that all this world actually is like an imaginary thing which came inside, maybe also because of the fruit. It's a dog which created a whole world of illusion. I don't know. I mean, there seem to be people who know the truth, but they are not allowed to share it. If you were allowed to share the truth with us, we would be very thankful.
Yes. I have a question. I remember reading often that that the world was created and destroyed 4 times before Adam and Hava. So, what were there humans in those worlds? Were there something else? What was that like?
Okay. Well, partly answer your question. People say if the world is going to be 6,000 years old, how come we have dinosaurs that are millions and billions of years old? You answer. In other words, there were 4 worlds that were created before, and they had these creatures. So science doesn't conflict with Torah.
Oh. Okay. Anyone else wants to say something? Quite a few subjects here. Still, yes.
You said the soul is even higher than the brain, which still is a part of the animal, but the soul for sure is only a human and spiritual entity. I'd like to know, I mean for sure Gemara and Mishnah, as we know, Mishnah and the Shaman has the same letters, but is there a way of kindling this soul, which is also this letters of Hashemen, which is the oil, which needs to burn apparently, to make light, to bring light into the darkness. I mean, if you would have a practical advice is to more feel in every moment this divine spark, which even the Greeks, they say that man has a divine spark. They thought it was Prometheus who brought the fire to mankind as a forbidden gift. I mean, from the thing, it's kind of similar. But how do you get this divine spirit all the time aware to yourself that you have to still have?
Well, we get up in the morning and say, Modeni lefanecha, shenatati bi nishmati, that you placed my soul into me.
Yeah.
And then we say, especially to Phelan, chong shenatati bi tohorahi.
Yeah.
You are the one who created the soul, and you put it into me, and that soul remains forever.
Mm-hmm.
So help us look after it. In other words, the human being is made up of 3 levels of the soul, though the terms are used sometimes one of them for all the 3, but it is certainly a deeper analysis to the 3 concepts. One is nefesh, which is a life power, which human beings share with an animal world, although perhaps it's a different connection, because even the nefesh is connected with ruach and the neshama. Then these are the animalistic instincts which we have possessed also. And then we have the neshama, which is the breath of Hashem, which is really a power that's beyond nature, stays forever. Also in the future, when the body is no longer functioning. And then there's Ruach, which is the power of the will. Whether we're going to identify our ego with the animal inside us, or whether we identify our ego with Hashem, with the Neshama. And we have the power to give direction. We have the power to, as we say, to allow the Yetzirah Tov, which is the Neshama, to rule over the Yetzirah and to channel the Yetzirah to follow the directives given by the neshama, that's one way of the ruach. The other way is the other way around, that we suppress our awareness of the neshama, of the voice of God inside us, through identifying our feeling of self with the material self, with Yitzhara. So, but to go, since you've raised quite a lot of questions, I'll go back to the first question, which has got to do with, is true existence only in the mind? So looking at this from the deeper aspect, also the Shema Vayo, there's one of the greatest minds that has analyzed the language of the Tanakh more deeply, also in connection with basic questions of existence, is Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch, in his Essays in Linguistics, he said like this: modern scientific thought is based upon Cartesian philosophy. Descartes, he was called, a French philosopher, who said that cogito ergo sum, you mentioned the, really it's the philosophy of solipsists, but in the Greeks there was already a concept of solipsy, who say, maybe the whole of life that we experience is all an illusion. Yeah? Maybe your life is a stage on which people act out, but it means nothing. It's just each person in his mind gets a picture of life, but it's not the reality, it's an illusion. And they say there's no, who can really prove that the life we have is not just the same as a dream? A person is a dream. In the dream he thinks, let's say, he is here in Yerushalayim, he sleeps here. In the dream, he's in America, or he's in Europe, and he thinks that's the reality. Then he wakes up from the dream and realizes that the dream is just a stupid illusion, and the reality is this world. Well, perhaps one day we'll wake up and think, the world we live in is also just a dream.
Okay, so let's say it's a dream. What would that change in your life? Let's say if it was.
Well, therefore they doubt.
That's the question.
Therefore they doubt whether things exist. So this is what Descartes says. Descartes says like this: what I'm thinking, is it a dream or is it reality? Does everything just exist in the mind, or is it objective existence? I don't know. Cogito, but because I have this question in my mind, it proves ergo sum, proves that I must exist. Because how can I not exist? Then I wouldn't have this doubt. I only have the doubt that I exist. So he concluded, because cogito, I'm having doubts and thinking, therefore I must exist. There must be an objective existence in me. And since an objective exists in me, David was a strong believer in Hashem. So he said, if I exist, and I see the physical world around me, and therefore the physical world around me also is reality. And since I can't explain the physical world just by itself, it can only be explained with a mind that created and continues to produce all the energies in the world, therefore God exists. That's Descartes' argument. The human mind is a reality, teaches us the reality of the human being. As the human being teaches us the reality of the world, the reality of the world teaches us the reality of Hashem.
That's the
argument of Descartes.
Could you repeat
and that is the way, it's not so important, it's what's more important, is Rav Hirsch.
Okay,
so Rav Hirsch says, and this is more correct, he says, how do we explain the Shema Vayo? The basis of it is existence. The root of the in Evron Lev Hashem is existence, the one who causes existence. So he said, he turned the other way around. He said Descartes is wrong. The right truth is cogitor ergo sum. Because I am thought by Hashem, therefore I exist. It's the other way around. And you can say this is the basis of the Torah. In other words,
exist because of Hashem.
Ein od milvado. We say also, it says, there's nothing besides Hashem. How can you say there's nothing besides Hashem when there's a big world and we're in the world? The answer is, Ein od milvado kamuto. That means, God, because the definition of God as we have it is not that God is a product of human thought. Descartes says, our belief in Hashem is a product of human thought. Yeah? So he says, see, so therefore he says, no, we'll go further back, and therefore we say, because Hashem thinks, Vayomer Hashem means Hashem thought, and actually speak like we speak. Vayomer is, the Amira is always, a person can speak in his heart. Vayomer Belibo, that means speech. Vaydaber is actual words. But Vayomer means he in his Machshava said, there should be light, and there should be water, and so on. He, Hashem's will is that it should be. So therefore, he's a cogitor ergo sum, because I'm thought by Hashem, therefore. It's true. We are part of the thought of Hashem. The whole of the world is really the plan of what Hashem wants to produce. And in this world, we do have an individual existence. Hashem has given you a being, but the relative existence. We are a tzelem elokim. We are not God Himself, not absolute, but we have a relative existence which is tied up with Hashem. And this concept, when Moshe Rabbeinu had the revelation for Hashem at the burning bush, so he said, what name shall I give to the people of Israel? So he said that I am that I am. Yeah.
I am
that
I am.
Yes. Eke Asher Eke. I am that I am. This is my name. Zeh Shemi Le'olam. This is my name forever. There's something very deep here. In fact, here, Hashem is absolute existence. And we accept Him to be beyond the human mind, beyond existence, because He's the one who constantly recreates the world. He's above the world. Human beings, we exist not. So like, I'll put it another way. Herman Ruch, in his famous book, This Is My God, he said when he was a youngster, he went also to Hebrew classes. So the rabbi said to him, God is the first cause. So we'll ask the question, well, who caused God? And the teacher was stumped. He couldn't say who caused God. Yes? So I told him when I did it, maybe somebody wrote to him, I don't know. I said,
that's a silly question.
Why is that silly?
Is it?
Yeah, because God started God. What kind of question is that?
Well, yes. Okay, that's what people ask. If everything is cause, and you go to the first cause, you come to God. But if everything is cause, who caused God?
They don't believe either way, so it doesn't matter.
The answer is, what is the answer? You said silly questions, so what's the answer?
The answer is God is God. He's the first, the last, and the beginning, the end.
Meaning what? What does it mean? But if there's a rule of causality,
I don't have an eloquent way to explain it, but in a simple language, that's
so. Listen. The answer is that the definition of God is that He's not caused. That's what it says. I am that I am. Everything else in the world exists because of other causes. There's a theory of relativity, which also says you can only define anything in the world as a result of its relationship to time and space. With Every object, everything in the world is relative to time and space. For example, we think, is it absolutely true that we are sitting still here round a solid table? Is it?
No.
Is that true? No.
No.
Is it not true?
No. It looks true. It's an illusion that it's true. But
yeah. So what's the truth?
Atoms.
What's the truth?
Atoms.
in relationship, just a relationship, in relationship to this building. Are we sitting still?
No.
Still, what do you mean still?
This building. We are sedentary, we're sitting down still, around this table, in this room, related to the building, we are sitting still. The building's also sitting still. Yeah. And the building's on ground that is also terra firma and firm ground, and it's still.
Well,
but the truth is, depends how you do the measurements. If you do the measurements in comparison with the movement of the globe, well, it's moving enormously. It's not different to sitting still like a child is sitting still in a supersonic aeroplane, looks out the window, and it says, why are all those trees and houses moving so fast? Yeah, because that child thinks, I'm sitting still in a very comfortable seat in this aeroplane. I don't feel it. I'm not moving. No, not moving at all. Because you're right inside the supersonic aeroplane. That's it. But the aeroplane goes at enormous speed. And the globe goes at even bigger speed. Yeah? So therefore, and the speed of light is even more, so the measurements goes even faster. Therefore, everything in the world is all relative. Everything relative to other situations. Everything exists because of something else. That's the significance of the sheen. Why is it? I spoke yesterday about the sheen of the tefillin. Sheen of tefillin describes our relationship of the Jew with absolute God. We are related to Him and not to any, because that's the Tzelem Elokim, the divine image. What means the image? We are not God. We are not absolute. The human being is relative, and the whole of nature is relative. Relative to what? Relative to Hashem. Hashem is the absolute, and everything else is constantly created by Him and guided by Him. So that's the concept of the relativity of the world mentioned in this Pasuk. It can be understood much easier in Pasuk, where Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the definition of God. He said, I am that I am, that's God. Zeh Shami Le'olam, this is my name. Le'olam, what's the word Olam mean?
World.
Forever and ever.
Forever.
And what else?
Le'olam.
Means to this what?
World.
World. The universe. Olam is the infinite universe and the eternity of time. Yeah? Which is a mystery. The mysterious universe. In fact, there's a book by James Jeans, an astronomer, a scientist, called The Mysterious Universe. He based it also on relativity. So, the universe is so mysterious because it's a universe limited by time and space, and yet there's no limit. There's no limit to time and space. Eternity, conceptually speaking, time go on and on and on, and space can go wider and wider, the expanding universe, how far we go. So we see, we live in a limitation of time and space. That's how we measure things. But there's a power beyond time and space. That's the mystery. And that Zeh Shami L'Olam, my name, I am that I am, is my name in the mysterious world where there's a time-space continuum. Because Olam means time and space, which goes on and on. Goes on in space, goes on in time. So this is the mind of Hashem above the mind of man. And to put it in another way, as it says in the Zohar, it says like this, that Hashem sovev kol almin, all universes that you would describe, Hashem is beyond them. Hashem amalek kol almin, and He also fills all the universes. That means Hashem is near and He's far. He's so near because He's the one who constantly creates and constantly has hashgacha on everything that happens in the world and on all minute seconds of time. Hashem is above them, and every minute aspect of space and of matter, which goes into matter, we analyze it, becomes a world of molecules and a world of nuclei and electrons. That is matter. So Hashem is the one who keeps all moving. Like one of the scientists says, that really, according to the conclusions of modern science, there are four basic energies, which are the strongest. The strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, the world of electromagnetism, and the world of mass and velocity. So these are four different dimensions and forces that exist in every aspect of the universe. And we've got to find the great universal principle that combines them all. So, you know, there was a very great nuclear scientist, and he was a great lecturer in nuclear physics. He was the youngest don in Cambridge University, and he was a Frum Jew, and he gave talks in the yeshiva, Professor Cyril Dom, a very close friend, brilliant mind, and he knew Steve Hawkins, who said, made the statement, please write him a letter. That's antique language to tell him that the great universal principle is, which combines the four basic forces, these are the three parts of the divine chariot that keeps the world going. So you should explain it to him in his terms. I mean, you know, he's changing. I don't know what's with him today. He comes up and changes his ideas, but he speaks a lot about God as the mind of the universe. So anyway, but to come back to our subject, come to Rosh Hashanah, we say the same thing. In fact, to the next page, we'll go into the Gemara that some of us have been studying, which I haven't given you yet, deals with this whole subject. What happens on Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is the head of the year. That means the potential of the whole year. And Hashem on Rosh Hashanah judges everything. The question is, how do you combine that with the opinion mentioned in Pesukim that Hashem judges, is concerned with every day and even every moment of the Jew, of the person, of every human being? So this is the same concept, that the whole of the time of the year is, as it were, to judge together with Skira Achat on Rosh Hashanah, which is like the brain, nerve center, contains all the influences of the limbs. So Rosh Hashanah is the head of the year. So it's like the head, which is very important in the brain, which is the source of mental energy for every part of the body. Stop. You can keep this if you wish. Now, my son Rav Yaakov is now giving a shiur on the Chumash. Next week's parsha.